Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 26th. I'm Ray Graff. These are interesting times for many of us as we are tethered to some extent to our homes. And I thought today on the program we would think about something fun to do, and that's digging in the dirt. Even if you don't have a plot of land, you can always throw some seeds in a pot. We'll talk gardening today with Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They're here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We will think spring and positive thoughts for this hour, and we'll talk gardening. Your call's coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. As we continue our general theme of things that you can do at home or think about while you're at home, great idea today is to do gardening show, and that's what we will do. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery is here, and arborist Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. And listen, if you have a gardening call, get it in early. We may break around 2:40. Governor Cuomo and Alan Chartok scheduled to talk at that time. So let's do as many gardening calls as we can. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Let's welcome our gardeners. Fred Breglia, are you there, sir?
I am. How you doing, Ray? Good to be here.
It's odd having you remote, but there you are. And Greg Ward, are you there?
I certainly am, Fred. Ray.
Fred, Ray. You call me whatever you want. It's just good that you're here. And, you know, thanks for sending those pictures of some beautiful flowers over at Ward's Nursery.
Well, I just thought I'd cheer you up a little bit there.
We'll try to post a few on our webpage afterwards. You sent them 3 minutes before airtime, but still, we'll try to put them on the page after the show.
Well, you know me.
Yeah,
you know me.
Well, it's good that you're here. This email was here about 1:45, and then we'll jump on the phones. This one's from Beck, and Beck writes, "We have 72 beets started. They were all doing wonderfully, and then slowly they started dying, and now we have lost about 50% of the crop. We had great germination, a heat mat, and a grow light. Any suggestions, recommendations?"
And you said beet, right, as in the B-E-T?
That's correct, sir.
Yeah. You know, it was cloudy for several days, cooler. There is a thing called damping off, which is a little fungal infection usually right at the stem and causes the plants to wilt over. Often an issue with soil that may not be as sterile as it could be, especially, you know, seed-starting soil. I think there's no other choice than to start over, and I would certainly start over with fresh soil, treat the, we all know how to sanitize now, so treat the trays or the plug trays, whatever he's using, the pots, with a little bleach and water and some fresh soil and start again. It's a little early for the beets anyway, so I think the timing is better now.
All right, fair enough. Fred?
Yeah, I agree. You know, damping off is a disease that really does attack a lot of seedlings, and it doesn't take much to get a very tender seedling to wilt out with fungal issues, especially if there's any kind of pathogen that's in that soil or even on that container.
Yeah.
You can't be sterile enough. Once the plant's actually up and growing, then they're kind of like human beings. They have a little bit more of a bolstered immunity, and okay, they can take more things in general. So, you know, generally, I think your timing, like Greg said, is really, really good here. We are actually a little early for beets anyway, so he might even do better this next time around in terms of timing.
All right, gentlemen, let's jump right to the phones, 800-348-2551, gardening today on Vox Pop, and we begin with Chuck in Hudson. Hello, Chuck.
Hello, how you doing? This is might be an unusual question, but I want to verify it because I was listening to another plant show the other day.
Okay.
And they were saying, you know how when those maple trees have those helicopters coming down?
Yep. Yep. They're little seeds called samaras, but yes, they resemble little helicopters.
Yeah.
Sure do.
And I was wondering, they said on there that you can eat them like sunflower seeds.
No
Is that
more.
True?
Fred.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if you could eat maple seeds in terms of edibility. I do know that they're poisonous to horses.
Oh, boy. Chuck, which, are you a horse?
You wouldn't think so, but a lot of times maple trees are actually some of the culprits that get involved with the horse poisoning because they're out in the pastures. And if those seeds could get into their water, they often can drink the water and then they can end up with some problems. But in terms of human palatability, you know, I've never heard anyone really roasting up maple seeds and eating them in that way. So the old saying goes, if you're not 100% sure of the edibility of a plant, or mushroom or anything like that, definitely don't eat it until you are 100%.
That's
and,
right.
That would be one that I would say if you wanted to give me a little time to research that, you could send me an email, fred@landisarboretum.org. I do a lot of foraging, and I do consume a lot of wild plants and mushrooms, so I have a pretty good idea, and this would be something that would be worth researching for me. I've just never heard of people eating them, so the question really comes down to
will you die?
Are they toxic or not? And you know, I don't know the answer to that one, so when in doubt, let's wait. And give me a little time to dig into that one a little bit.
And Chuck, for God's sake, don't do it unless you know for sure. Yeah, thanks a lot. We sure don't want any of our listeners to die. At least of eating maple seeds.
I agree. There's so many other things to eat that are much more fun.
And there's so many other ways to die. Let's go to Stanley in Johnstown. Stanley, you're on.
Hello, Ray, Greg, and Fred. My question is about hickory nut trees. Now, on my land, I must have 30 or 40 hickory nut trees. Only a very few bear nuts, and very few. Most of the trees do not bear nuts at all. There's some trees I know on other people's land. My God, their nuts would be 4 inches thick on the ground in the fall. Hmm. And I'm just wondering, what is the reason for that?
So I guess I would say a couple of things. Are the trees all the same species? Because there's lots of different types of hickory, and some are going to produce a lot more nuts than others. For example, the shagbark hickory is certainly a much more prolific producer of nuts than perhaps some of the other varieties. And there's also a huge amount of genetic variability amongst trees. So just because one tree does really, really well doesn't always mean that the other ones, even if they are the same species, will do as well. And then furthermore, there are also ages involved. So I don't know what the ages of your nut trees are, but if they're on the younger side, they will take a while. When I say a while, it could take, you know, a good chunk of years for them to start to develop nuts. So if they're all large, and they're sort of comparable to your neighbor's land, then I would say there probably is some, you know, genetic diversity in there or some species that may be a little different than the neighbor's.
Yeah, I believe they should have.
Hang on, go ahead, Greg
flowers.
Ward. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Greg.
Go ahead. Yeah, I believe they, you know, both male and female flowers separate but on the same tree, and so you should, and if you have several trees, you should get cross-pollination with that. That said, you know, just like acorns, you have very heavy years and very light years, and it's not every other year. It's often several light years in a row, then a heavy crop, et cetera. So,
Well, these trees, I've got both varieties, the shagbark and shellbark. And it seems like the shellbark, they're tall. These things are, my gosh, they got to be 50, 60 foot tall. They're huge. And like I say, some years they'll bear some, but not a whole heck of a lot. Mm. And like I say, the other ones, I've been here 40 years, and some trees just never have borne any nuts.
Mm. Yeah, and there would be other factors too, like shade exposures. That would also have a bit of a role. So if your neighbor had maybe more sun and you know, perfect soils, and yours were maybe a little more shaded or a little more crowded and not quite a good soil. You know, there's a lot of factors
that
over
makes
a lot
sense.
Of time.
Okay.
I think you could, you know, squirrels or
trees
birds
are
eating
in
on the buds.
In a row, like, yes, on the side of a field. Her trees are on the side of a field, and probably maybe that's what it is, the lighting of the tree.
Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, that'll play a huge role. If you're giving it everything you want or one's getting a little more shaded, I tend to see less nut production on those trees. So I think we've kind of more or less answered that indirectly, if that hopefully works for you.
Greg, you want to get the last word in on this?
No, I think really Fred covered it. It really is just, you know, about culture and seasonality, you know.
All right, Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery. Fred Breglia is here from Landis Arboretum. If you've been listening to our programming the last week or so, you know that we have been, it's the social distancing thing. And so everybody is on the phone, and I appreciate Greg and Fred being here. It's a little tougher to do the show when you can't see me grimace, but we'll do
that. That is true.
I'm missing that.
Well, you'll get your fill.
I am too.
You'll get your fill soon enough. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you're on.
Hi, Ray. I got an easy question for the guests.
All right.
Last fall, I constructed a rock garden. I used rather large stones. And what I want to do is in between those stones, I was thinking of planting perennials. I was thinking of I need tall perennials so they'll go above the stones. So they got to be 16 or 18 inches in height. I want long-lasting flowers on them and something that'll tolerate both the sun and shade. I was thinking of coleus or cone flowers, but I was wondering if there's any other suggestions.
So coleus is really an annual. It'll do that 16 or 18-inch height, and it will definitely tolerate the shadier parts quite nicely, so it's a fun thing to choose. But you will have to plant that every year. It won't come.
Yes, I know that, but I should have mentioned that.
Okay. Yeah, so coleus is a great choice. Coneflowers, you know, they don't need it to be sunny all day, but they definitely need a good 4 or 5 hours of good, strong sun. Other moderate light plants that would go maybe with a coleus, like a stilbe would work. Certainly, some of the smaller bleeding hearts that bloom through the summer would work quite nicely. I'm trying to think of a few others.
What was the first one, stilbe, you said?
A stilbe.
How do you spell that?
A-S-T-I-L-B-E.
Hmm. Can you use it in a sentence?
No. I still be in love with you, Ray.
That's very nice, Greg. That's very good. I'm sorry I asked. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think of a few others as I round the bend, though. Something a little bit lower, there's, little alchemilla, little lady's mantle. There's definitely some primrose would be coming up early, lots of primulas that would be in the 12-inch range.
Yep, you could try some hosta as well in there. There's a million different types of hosta, and they would certainly, you could pick the color palette and the height you'd like, very tough plants that would tolerate shade and sun. There's also woody plants you could incorporate, things like slender dutia, a really neat plant. It'll probably get to be about under 2 feet tall. And depending on what variety you get, there are some spireas, depending on how much shade you're getting, that also would work. I know daylily generally likes more sun than shade, but they're tolerant, they're tough. Depending on if you get a lot of filtered light, you might be able to get away with some of these other things as well.
All right. Kerry, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's the gardening show today with Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Ordinarily, we'd take an underwriting break around now, but our producer, Jackie Orchard, says since the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, will be joining Alan Chartok around 2:40, we would bypass the break, keep going with the calls. And once again, if you want to get in, very brief amount of time here, 800-348-2551. We go now to Linda in Albany. Linda.
Yes. Crabgrass clobbered my lawn last year, and I wanted to know before I put seed down in the bare spots and try to bring them back, I wanted to know how to stave off the crabgrass, what I should use and how early I should use it.
Yeah, you have a few choices. So you can do no chemical treatments or organic or otherwise, but remove, dethatch all of that dead crabgrass. So the crabgrass is an annual. It died over the winter. It dropped lots of seeds before it did that, and those seeds will be germinating in the next few weeks. If you clean off the plants, amend the soil, and simply put in a perennial grass seed, they will compete with each other, and you may be able to slowly work it out that way. The other option would be to do all of that, but then treat the area with a pre-emergent that is specific to crabgrass. This is not an organic alternative. This is a chemical alternative, but you certainly can consider that if you wish. And what that does is stop the crabgrass from germinating, but not the perennial seeds you put down. Third, you can treat the crabgrass once it's up and alive as a plant, sort of a post-emergent application, and that would happen later in May or the 1st of June.
Okay.
So those are your three options.
So if I go looking for this and I ask for a pre-emergent, then the garden shop would know what I was talking about?
Yeah, but tell them you want a crabgrass pre-emergent specifically, and you want the product that is you're able to seed immediately. There's no waiting. Some of the products you would put down, you would not put down. You would have to wait to put the perennial seed down for 6 weeks.
All right. Linda, thanks so much for the call, 800-348-2551. A shortened edition of Gardening Vox Pop today. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward. And let's go to Fishkill. And, Paul, you're up.
Hello, yes. My question today is about Korean pear trees. I'm the furthest thing from a green thumb, and last year I over-pruned them. I went very low on the shoots, and we didn't get much fruit. So this year I really didn't prune them much at all, and it's probably too late. But what's the best way to prune those so they're most productive?
Well, you know, generally, how old is the plant? How old is the tree? How big or how old is it?
Probably about 10 years.
Okay.
10, 12 years. They were there. I moved in 4 years ago.
Okay, so fairly, what I would consider a fairly young tree that would be, you wouldn't see the larger amounts of dead wood that you would see associated with older trees. So generally, the way to proceed with pruning priorities is always going to be your dead or broken branches first. Those come out, and those dead branches can come out virtually any time of year. And then you're going to go after water sprouts and suckers. The suckers come up around the base. The water sprouts look like those little fast shoots that grow up around the base, only they're going to be up in the canopy, and sometimes they can get really thick in there, depending on the variety and the genetics, and other times they won't be as thick. But you could generally clean those suckers or water sprouts out. They're just kind of taking a lot of the sort of the vigor away from the main fruiting branches. But when you do that, you want to make sure that you're not taking away spurs. So if you look at a branch, you're going to see these kind of quick little sprouts that grow out. But then you'll see other ones that are also looking similar, but they're a little bit gnarlier and a little bit woodier. And they've actually been there for a few years generally. And those are where your fruit and flower are going to form. So a lot of times when people clean out the branches, I often see people taking away a lot of the spurs as well. And in essence, if you're doing that, you are removing the place where a lot of the fruit is going and flowers are going to form. So we want to leave as many spurs and interior foliage as you can, but just take it away. And then after you've got those sprouts removed, I would look for crossing branches. And, generally branches that are, rubbing up against each other or they're going to, one of those generally needs to be removed. They're going to create some friction wounds. And other than that, you want to create sort of an open sort of fruit tree, so you don't have a lot of thick foliage in there, but you also don't want to clean out all the interior foliage. That would be bad. So it's just a lot of times less is more. Take those water sprouts, take those suckers, look for some crossing branches, and ultimately you should have a lot more fruit and flower on that. You could also give it a little fertilizer, and the time for fertilizing is actually coming up right now. One of the main times is the roots get really active when the ground temperature starts to rise and before shoots have actually started to grow. So we say roots gather before shoots grow. So roots before shoots. So get the fertilizer down in the near future, a granular, all-purpose, complete fertilizer. I like to use organic products. But any good organic fertilizer that's complete, including micronutrients and trace elements, that's going to be a great thing to put down. You don't need any kind of special tools for that. You can literally just broadcast it with a coffee cup or coffee can. Real easy to do, and you should have a lot more production on those trees. Now the other thing is timing on the pruning. So if you go to depending on when you pruned it, generally we prune those plants when they're dormant. But you could also let the plant literally flush out in the summer and then do a little selective pruning here or there, and you'll know if it has fruit on it in the summer. So if it has fruit, generally don't take those branches off. but you can do a little bit of pruning throughout the summer on that plant anytime in the end of June through July. But you are going to be sometimes removing a little bit of fruit when you do that as well. Either way, I think, you know, you do those steps, you should have some really good results.
Well, thank you for the call. Greg Ward is here. Go ahead, Greg. Did you want to say something?
Well, the only other thing I would, you know, say, Fred, I know I think you said it, but maybe not the, you know, that 20% rule, that it sounds like he did some severe pruning last year. He doesn't want to do as much, but if you sort of view the tree and remove no more than 20, 25% of the entire tree this year, that just is a little better, makes the tree a little healthier.
All right.
That's a good general guideline to follow for most plants. 25% rule, or a quarter of the foliage in any one pruning session should be the maximum.
All right, let's go over to Mary in Kingston. Mary, you're on.
Hi. You guys just answered my question, truly, except the second half of that was last year, there were a plethora of little spots all over the apples. There's a small orchard. It's mixed between an older type of apple and some peaches that I keep an eye on a few times a week. And the homeowner's hoping that I can prune out, which, thank you for those instructions. I will follow them. And the other thing is, what can I apply to the fruit as it's coming along in the season to prevent the spots? Because the apples are great. They're edible.
Yeah, most of those spots are probably a combination of like apple scab is probably the main culprit. But, you know, a general purpose organic fruit tree spray, like an oil type of thing applied early on, would be probably your best bet in terms of organic and not spraying nasty chemicals. And by no means will this prevent every single spot, but it would help reduce the amount of the spots. Also, last year was a pretty, I found it to be a pretty bad year in terms of, you know, a lot of apple diseases. It was sort of prolific on a lot of plants.
Yeah, so
more so than normal,
right?
Greg, go ahead.
I mean, after pruning, wouldn't you suggest, Fred, wouldn't you suggest that we do a horticulture oil, a dormant oil spray now to reduce, you know, any of the wintering spores, and then to work into some, if they really do want to try to clean up the fruit, work into some, you know, they're usually called complete fruit tree sprays or organic forms, which would include a fungicide and an insecticide, and you run the course of your growing season until the fruit is ripe with those on an every 10 or 14 day basis, and you do have choices of organic products as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Definitely.
So just an hour ago, in the nice, beautiful, bright sunlight, I noticed around the base of one of the trees was this yellow, like dandelion yellow colored growth all around the base and creeping up the trunk. And I went, oh, what is that?
I'd love to see a picture of that.
Okay, I can swing out and get that. And then should I send it to Vox Pop?
Sure, yeah, you could send it to voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll make sure that Greg Ward gets it, and we'll maybe bring it up on the next show, which hopefully these guys will be live in the studio. Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. And we have I got to tell you guys, we have a stack of emails here and a ton of calls. We only have about 8 or 9 minutes until Governor Cuomo is set to talk with Alan Chartok, but we'll try to get to as many as we can here. This email came in from Barbara. Simple question. What vegetable seeds should we be sowing indoors and outdoors now? And we'll take a minute on that and then get back to the phones.
Yeah, so if you're in our area, you know, you it's a little early to be sowing too much outdoors unless you have a cold frame, which would be generating, you know, enough heat to kind of mimic mid-late April. So, but indoors, lots of fun things. Anything, all your seed packages kind of give you the results. So sort of perusing the label is always fun, whether it's in a magazine or online or wherever. They'll tell you when you should put the seeds in soil according to your last frost. So our last frost here in Great Barrington is usually around the 25th or so of May. And if it says, you know, it says plant 8 weeks before last frost, well, we're getting pretty close to that. We're about there.
All right.
Go
ahead,
that's
Greg.
About it.
All right. Let's go for
outdoors, you know, they'll tell you to seed, you know, again, according to frost, seed 2 weeks after last frost or seed 2 weeks before last frost. And today you could be certainly starting, you're a little late on any of your allium, so your onions, your shallots, those kinds of things you want to get going. You could be doing, if you don't have to, but you could be doing early now any of your cabbage, crucifer type. So cabbages, broccolis, kales, they could all happen now. And you can probably, I forgot, the one thing you can put in the ground right now is peas. You can put them right in the ground today.
Okay, great. Well, Tina in Sheffield is on the line. Tina, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Well, I've been slowly getting rid of my lawn, which is in full sun. And so far, we've planted raised vegetable and flower beds, but now I want to remove more lawn and then replace it with some easy-to-maintain pollinator garden.
Great. That sounds fantastic.
So I've read about solarizing to get rid of the lawn. I'm not sure if you have any suggestions on that. And the other part is I've heard it's hard to establish wildflowers or some easy-to-maintain, you know, pollinators. Not a fancy garden, but more like a wildflower field I'm picturing.
Mm.
Yep. Well, you know, getting rid of that soil is often the easy part. And, you know, solarizing, which is involving a sort of wet lawn, and then you put on a hot day a clear plastic covering, and it creates a very intense heat in there. And literally, if you do it right, it can burn out all that grass very rapidly. But I personally would say that, you know, instead of waiting for those perfect conditions to solarize it, I would say that if you just covered it with some either old weed fabric type material or black plastic now, you would actually be well on your way to getting rid of that grass by the time you were ready to start to install plants in the spring. So just giving it a month of cover would pretty much stop most of the material, especially since it hasn't had a chance to grow yet. So if you put down any area that you want to get rid of just a piece of black plastic, that would work. I personally I don't like weed fabric, as a disclaimer, but I like using weed fabric to get rid of turf and weedy areas because it lets water through and it lets air through. So even though you're smothering those plants, you're not stopping the natural air and moisture cycle that's occurring with that soil. So to me, you're going to get out there and put something down to cover it over now. Cardboard would also work.
Yeah.
So if you had some old cardboard, that would also work.
Well,
and just cover the area, give it a month or so, and then all the plants that are there, all that turf and all that grass is all going to become awesome fertilizer, organic fertilizer for whatever crop you put in. And then in terms of wildflowers and pollinator-type plants, there's literally a plethora of different types of plants that we can choose from.
All right.
Lots of different things. Depending on what your exposure is, it's not very hard to establish a lot of pollinator plants. A lot of these plants do quite well. So if you gave us a little more info on your site, we might be able to narrow down what plants.
Hang on. Time out, guys. Now, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is, Fred, we have to let you go because Governor Cuomo is calling in on your line. And thank you, man. And sorry about, some things take precedent at this time, and we'll get you at more normal times the next time. And thank you very much. The good news is, Greg, you get to answer this last question, and then we're going to be done in about 2 minutes, okay?
Sure. All right, guys. Hey, listen, happy spring. We'll talk to you soon. Be well, guys.
Thanks, Fred. We appreciate it. Let's go to Patrick in Red Hook. Patrick, you're on.
Yes, I have a simple question. My grass is dying underneath my downspouts, and I have a copper roof and gutter.
Yeah. Well, I think you answered your question. That copper is toxic to plants in general, and so it's most likely as it slowly leaches a little bit, the copper is in the soil and may be doing them in. The other thing is plants don't like a lot of water, so I would advise putting a little granular, little crushed stone under those downspouts so that you don't have the lawn there.
Okay.
All right.
What I was thinking. Thank you very much.
All right. That was a fast one, Greg. So let's quickly go over to Kevin, who's on the road. Kevin, you got about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, hey, real quick one. I started some beans inside. I didn't think they'd grow that quick. So I had a bunch of them. So I put a bunch outside. And after the snow this morning, they look as good as they did when I put them in. Are they going to live?
Yeah, you're sure they're beans or not peas?
Yeah, I'm going to read the package when I get back. I mean, these things look as healthy as I did when I put them in.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. It is pea season, but beans usually like it a lot warmer, so that's why I asked that question.
All right, I'll have to check it when I get back, and I'll call you in a couple weeks.
All right, man.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. And well, I'll tell you what, Pamela's still waiting, and we're still waiting for the governor. So, Pamela and Troy, let's make it quick.
Okay. Thank you much. I have a bunch of pots that I put annuals in different spots in the yard. I also have a concrete block wall, the decorative sort, around the perennial bed, and I did not cover the top, so they're little, they're like little clay pots. And I put annuals in there, so there's always something going, even if the perennials are... I've got ants in the pots that I put around the yard and in some places in the wall.
All right.
What can I do about them?
Very quickly, Greg.
I would definitely take the soil out, disturb the ants. It's better to put new soil in there, but if you want to do a 50-50 mix after a few days of letting the ants disperse, I think you'll be all set. They're probably coming from up out of the ground below the pots.
Okay, well, that's it, Pamela. And Greg Ward, thank you for being here as well. Again, some important information here will take precedent over the rest of the show, so we will cut it short. And, man, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you all for listening. In a moment, the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, will join Alan Chartok.